Well, Bob, I have a diversified operation. We have my wife and I have a farrow to finish swine operation. We're pretty small in today's standard. We only run about 120 sows, but it's enough to keep the two of us busy in the pork industry. And she is very involved, currently serving as the president of the Nebraska Pork Producers right now. So we meet ourselves coming and going at times.
Leave notes on the refrigerator?
Yes, we do at times, yep. Meet each other passing on the highway to the airport once in a while, is in fact. But we also have corn and soybeans in our rotation for the crop side of things. We have two sons that are back farming now. One son has been farming with us for about 6 years, and the other son just came back in May and started farming. So we're looking forward to the future and having the next generation back.
How many acres are you running?
My wife and I run about 2,000 acres, and with our sons and operation and some custom work that we do, we'll go over about 3,400 acres this year.
Enough to keep you busy anyway, huh?
Yes, it is. Between the farming and the volunteer work that we do, we seem to stay very busy.
How do crops look?
Well, we still have about 3 weeks to go, I feel, before we'll start harvest in northeast Nebraska. We've had an exceptionally wet year all year long after the middle of May when it started to rain. And it's been rather cool this year, so crops are behind development. Last week, the guys that was chopping silage said the milk line was about a third of the way to halfway down is all. So it's going to be a while before we reach black layer, and then it's going to take a while after that to get it down to where it's tolerable to even consider drying and harvest.
Are you getting close to a danger of killing frost?
Well, our normal killing frost is October 7th. Last Saturday morning, we had a light frost in the area, kind of burned the tops of some of the beans, you know, the top 4 inches or so, but it didn't kill the plant completely. So hopefully if we've made it through that cold snap there, that now we can make it till that October 7th time frame, which should get us to maturity on most of the crops.
Now, you serve on the USX Soybean Export Council. Obviously, there's a big soybean crop out there if everything comes to fruition. There's a lot of beans to market.
Yes, it is. Last year, we exported right at 60% or a little over 60% of all the beans that we grew in the U.S. So, like we was visiting earlier, if we hope to export 60% of this year's crop, that's going to be a lot of effort that's going to need to be made to export that big crop. But we're hoping that we can achieve that task.
Where's the biggest potential for growth here? I mean, are you looking at feeding livestock? Is that really where the big potential is going to be here?
Well, yeah, the livestock is by far the biggest potential. China continues to grow. Their demand for more protein, as in the form of meat, continues to grow over there every year. India is the next big market. India's population grows in the next 6 years, just the growth. I think it's 60 million people a year is what the population growth is in India. And they are becoming a wealthier class environment over there as well. And anytime they have more money to spend, they're going to spend it on food. And so poultry is the biggest source of meat protein that India consumes. And it'll be a huge market for us in the near future, we feel. Visiting with one of the directors from India last night, he thinks that in the next 2 years, 3 years at the extreme most, we will be exporting soybeans into India.
And one thing you mentioned, and we don't realize most of the time, and that is India is the largest dairy producer in the world.
Yes, they are. I just heard that today, that India is the largest dairy producer in the world. They are the second largest beef producer in the world. And so if we could tap into that demand for soy in the dairy industry, would be real big success for us.
Obviously, the soybean exporting countries around the globe are looking at those markets as well. What gives us the advantage?
Well, the advantage is the quality of the U.S. soybean. We've done a lot of feeding trials and studies around the world on product differentiation between the U.S. soybeans and soybean meal and the products from India and from South America. And every feeding trial pretty much that we've done, we have a higher digestible amino acid content. And through that higher digestible amino acid content, they are able to get a better rate of gain. So we have a better feed efficiency, which in turn is the least cost production.
In something like that, do you sponsor side-by-side trials in these potential countries?
Yes, we've done sponsored side-by-side trials. A lot of times we have universities do them so that it takes the debate about it's a one-sided trial. You know, it wasn't that the U.S. soybean industry did it themselves and came up with this information. The university in that country does the feeding trial or, or a private farm does that feeding trial, which generally is a large farm, and so they'll give us an unbiased opinion and show that we have a superior quality soybeans and soybean meal.
One of the challenges on the world market is genetically modified crops and some acceptance of those, some are not.
That is very true. China is a real challenge for us. Bayer has had the L Liberty Link 55 trait in China for seeking approval for 7 years, and they have not been able to get it approved yet. We would like to have that technology to be able to use here in the United States, but we don't want to have a disruption in our trade flow with China and have them reject shipments of beans, because China is by far our number one customer. They take over 30% of all the beans we grow here in the United States. And so we don't want to do anything by introducing a new trait that hasn't been approved in China to hurt our markets with them.
When you have a good supply of soybeans, are countries less likely to accept new technologies?
I don't know if that's so much of the fact. It's just consumer acceptance of it. And it seems like as people have more money to spend and can be more selective on the food that they eat, the activist groups come in and say that biotechnology is bad for them and it's going to be harmful to their food supply if they eat the GMOs. And so we're seeing that all around the world. You know, in the European Union, it's been a real factor there, but yet the European Union is the second largest importer of GMO soybean meal. In China, when China was a hungry country and they was really having a hard time finding food or protein, they didn't seem to mind having the GMOs as much as what they are starting today. In India, visiting with our USEC director from India last night, I was visiting with him about the acceptance of GMOs in India, and he said that the consumer is perfectly content with it. They see that it is a cheaper source of food for them, and they want to have the cheapest supply of food available to them. But it's these activist groups that come in, like the Greenpeace and whoever else it might be, that come in and give out the bad information, say it's not scientific and it's going to be harmful to them if they eat it. And they are that is the groups that are making it a challenge for us to have the biotech acceptance.